Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Welcome to another edition of the Baseball America Podcast. J.J. Cooper and Ben Badler joining you today as we continue our look through the American League West Top 10 prospects. Today we're talking Texas Rangers. Ben Badler wrote our Texas Rangers Top 10 and the top 30 that'll be in the prospect handbook that is finished and is at the printer, so we are in the process. It's not that far away from you getting your hands on the Baseball America Prospect Handbook. If you haven't got your hands on the, if you have not ordered your prospect handbook yet, baseballamerica.com/store, and you can order it now. And that, if you do it that way, you will not only be the first to get your hands on the Baseball America Prospect Handbook, because we get it and we can ship it out literally weeks before anyone else even gets it and can start shipping out orders. But also you get the supplement. You get an additional prospect for every team. We do the 31st prospect for every team in a supplement as well. But Ben, as we look at the Rangers right now, they here they sit, as they do seemingly most every year, heading into 2017, and you have to look at them, I would say, as kind of obviously one of the contenders in what looks to be, especially with the moves the Mariners are making, a very competitive American League West.
Yeah, I think they are going to be the favorites to win that division again. I think they've done a really nice job of building a club, combining pretty much every avenue of talent acquisition. They've guys from the draft, guys from international free agency, guys from trades, major league free agents too. They've really done a good job combining pretty much every avenue of talent acquisition you can go through to build that club.
And you look at it right now, one of the things that does mean that the Rangers have been pretty busy on the trade market recently, a couple of really massive trades. I mean, the Cole Hamels trade, obviously one from 2 years ago that is still paying dividends for them. And that way, at the same time, it did cost a significant amount of prospect talent. And then we look at last year, obviously, the Jonathan Lucroy trade is another one that it was a costly trade as far as prospects, but at the same time, they got Jonathan Lucroy in the deal. It does feel like, though, when you look at this Rangers top 10 right now, it's probably about as thin as it's been in a pretty long while, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. This is typically the Rangers have ranked among the top 10 farm systems in our farm system rankings just about every year. Now, this year, you can see that our system is probably a bottom 10 type farm system, but there's still a surprising amount of depth there given all of the trades that they've made. I mean, they've made trades that have thinned out the farm system considerably. That's going to happen when you trade four first round picks and make other trades, dealing away guys like Dylan Tate or Marcos Duplan or some of the other moves they've made, but they're doing it to get frontline major league players and those players who are controlled for multiple years. It's, all right, Carlos Beltran, yeah, that was a rental, but Cole Hamels, Jonathan Lucroy, these are two of the best players at their positions in baseball, and the Rangers have them under control for multiple seasons. So if you're going to, use your trade chips, those are the guys to be using them for, to bring back. Now, obviously, you look at what's left in the minor league system, and it's certainly thinned out. I mean, Leody Taveras is their number one prospect. I really like Leody Taveras. He was our number two or three international prospect the year he signed. He's come as advertised, if not better. In fact, I'd probably say he is even a little bit better than advertised. The defense has got really strong reviews in pro ball. After getting some mixed reviews on that when he signed out of the Dominican Republic. But is he a top 50 prospect in the game? probably, maybe not. He's kind of right on that cusp, I think. And then who else do they have in their top 100, in a top 100 list? You know, he might be the only guy. Maybe you can make a case for a Yohander Mendez or Ariel Hurano, but I think realistically, you know, there's probably only one top 100 guy, so it's certainly thinned out, but the goal is to use the farm system to help the major league club, whether it's bringing up homegrown talent or using those guys in trades to get back frontline guys like Luke Roy and Cole Hamels to help the major league team. So I think all the trades that they made are pretty understandable and really are helping them contend, you know, at the time they made the trade and then going forward in the future too.
Well, and the other thing about the Rangers right now is that they're well positioned from the standpoint of that they don't have a whole lot of needs at the big league level that you look at, okay, they need a prospect to step in here, there, and there. They've had a little bit almost, to be honest. I think that they've got a couple of no longer prospects that are, I think, probably more vital to the 2017 team than really most of the farm system is. You know, you look at what are we going to see from Jurickson Profar? Is he going to get somewhere back to where he was pre-multiple injuries? What are we going to get from Joey Gallo? Is Joey Gallo going to be a guy who, is he going to be Chris Carter? Is he going to be worse? Is he going to be better? You know, there's a lot of questions like that, which are guys who aren't prospects anymore, but at the same time could play important roles on this 2017 club.
Yeah, I think those are two huge X factors for them, and like it's a lot of risk with both guys. You know, risk. You know, we talk about risk with, you know, somebody like Leody Taveras is, you know, an extremely risky player because he's so far away. So it's a little bit different. We're talking about two guys who are, you know, actually, you know, on the major league roster right now in terms of risk, but. Profar, for obvious reasons, having missed so much time due to injury, but he's still, you know, 23, 24 years old. We've seen the talent from him when he is healthy. Is there a breakout waiting to happen? I don't know. I mean, it's hard to know what to project from him going forward, but obviously the underlying talent that we've seen the underlying talent there in the past to think that, yeah, maybe there's a chance that this guy is still pretty young. There's still a chance that he could have that breakout season. Joey Gallo, health is not the issue with him. The issues with him, obviously, are all the strikeouts. And he has enormous power. He offsets some of the strikeouts with walks, but he has to be able to put the ball in play more and cut down on the swing, which is always going to be a challenge for him. He's always going to have a lot of strikeouts, but he's got to get it to a more manageable rate. Now, I think at some point things are going to click for him, and he's going to be a guy who can hit in the middle of the lineup. The question is that going to be in 2017, or is that going to be in 2021.
Is he going to be on the Chris Davis plan, basically? Where?
Yeah, in which case the Rangers are probably not going to be the team he's doing it for. And there goes all the value from Joey Gallo. I think it's probably more likely that he does take a few more years to figure it out. I think it could happen sooner than that, but he might just be the kind of guy where, you know, you need to put him in have him face major league pitching. I don't think he's going to learn a ton more from facing Triple A pitching. It might be a situation where he needs to go through struggles against major league pitching and adapt that way and take some growing pains to be able to take that next step forward, which if he is struggling and you have him in your lineup every day, that would be tough to swallow if he is striking out at an unreasonable rate.
No, that's really kind of that's the problem when you are a contending team, is that the Rangers cannot give Joey Gallo 400 at-bats to figure it out. Because if he's not figuring it out, they're contending with the Astros. We saw this with with kind of the Astros last year, I had some of these issues, and the Astros faced some of these same issues, which is a guy like A.J. Reed, you weren't going to give A.J. Reed 300 at-bats to prove that he can be a big league first baseman. It was, no, we're moving on to Marwin Gonzalez. Is Marwin Gonzalez a first baseman? No, not really, but he's more productive right now than A.J. Reed, so there you go. And that could mean at some point that that does mean that Joey Gallo gets traded to some other team, which has the ABs to kind of to spend on a guy like that. And that I kind of, I mean, your kind of scenario there where Joey Gallo really succeeds for someone else down the road, it's not an implausible one, especially when you look at a Rangers team that probably should be contending in 17 and 18 as well. He's going to have to hit the ground running at a level that he has not yet been able to do at the big league level to really earn a job in, you know, with the Rangers. So, I mean, that makes some sense. Now, we talked a little bit about Taveras. Mendez and Jurado here at 2 and 3 on the list. Neither of them is a wow you kind of prospect, but both of these are guys who really I kind of could see could help them at some point in 17 because they have kind of advanced feel and they have some skills that unlike, say, Joey Gallo, may allow them to kind of make a quicker transition to the big league level. Is that fair?
Yeah, you're not going to see a ton of guys come up from the Rangers farm system, certainly not with much impact to help in 2017. But those are two guys who, I mean, Mendez already got to the big leagues last year. You'll probably see him a lot more. The Rangers are, they want to keep him as a starter. They see him as a starter. And, you know, I can understand why. It's a pretty easy delivery. He's got the fastball changeup combination from the left side. He throws, it's a fastball that doesn't overpower anybody, although the velocity did, tick up a little bit this year where he's more consistently sitting in the low 90s, but he's got that changeup too where it almost makes hitters swing late on the fastball because they know he has that changeup coming and you get a lot of off balance, ugly swings when he throws that changeup. So when you have that combination of those two pitches working, he can be extremely effective. He throws a lot of strikes. It's not like it's a high maintenance effort delivery. It's pretty smooth, pretty free and easy. The question on him is how many innings is he going to throw? I mean, this is the first time in his career where he threw more than 100 innings, and he's been able to slowly and gradually put on weight, but he's got, he has a history of missing a lot of innings over the course of his career because the Rangers have handled him extremely cautiously, and he has had some arm issues in the past. So can he hold up as a starter over a full season's workload? I don't know. I'm not saying he can't start. I think he could start, but it's definitely a risk factor with him in terms of whether he can hold up over that starter's workload or whether he may end up fitting better in the bullpen. And Ariel Jurado is a guy who, again, another guy who's not overpowered, very different physically. Mendez is like
6'5", he's not as frail.
200. Yeah, Jurado is a full-figured pitcher who, it's not overpowering type stuff. It's a two-seamer with the pure velocity is probably a tick below average, but when you combine the movement and I guess it's talking to teams that have that look at him on their TrackMan system, he's supposed to be an extremely high spin rate type guy with a lot of movement on that pitch. That's why you see him get so many ground balls. He just pounds the strike zone. Hitters don't get good swings on that fastball. So he doesn't walk a lot of batters. He also doesn't miss a lot of bats. So he doesn't really have a swing and miss secondary pitch. I think he's working on that changeup, working on the slider, trying to find something that can be at least reliable average. If he can turn him into reliable average pitches, we talk about that a lot, but it's a lot easier said than done. So, but if he can do that, I think he has a chance to to be a back-end starter, maybe because of the life, the movement on the fastball, maybe, and his ability to command it, maybe he plays up and is able to exceed those expectations and with his feel for pitching is able to do that. But I think he is a guy who, you know, we saw him get to double A at the end of the season. I think he is a guy who has a chance to, you know, in the second half of the season, be able to come up in Texas and help them out in their big league rotation and in the back of the rotation.
You get past them on the, as you said, on the top 10, and you get into kind of a group of guys who I call it the 50 high line. You know, we have the BA grades in the handbook, and every organization should have guys who have a chance to be big league starters, but they've got some significant holes to clear up, or they are a long ways away. And that kind of fits the, you know, or they're a little bit lower ceiling. That kind of fits guys like Andy Ibanez. That kind of fits guys like Ronald Guzman. You know, Alex Spies is very interesting, but he's got a lot of refinement to go. Ibanez is interesting to me, obviously, because for one thing, he's a Cuban and kind of started out last year destroying the Sally League, which was kind of expected because he was probably too advanced for the Sally League. But when it's all said and done, kind of what do you think Ibanez ends up being?
I think he ends up being a member of another organization because he's really limited to second base. I know the Rangers put him at third base. Everybody who's, you know, listening who's a Rangers fan or follows the Rangers farm system knows that the Rangers just put their guys all over the field. They'll go to Instructs and put Joey Gallo at shortstop. They'll put Jorge Alfaro in center field. They'll, you know, Ryan Cordell. They'll move these guys around to all different positions just to give them exposure at different spots. They really believe in that and giving exposure to guys at other positions. So they did put him at third base a little bit, but he, you know, he doesn't really have the arm to play over there. Even at second base, he's probably a tick below average defender there, and he's certainly not going to be able to play shortstop. So he's limited to second base, and in a lot of organizations right now, second base is blocked. But in the Rangers in particular, with Rugnet Odor being under team control for I think probably another four seasons or so,
and being, I believe, younger than Ibanez.
Yeah, that's and just I don't think Ibanez is ever going to be as good as Odor either. So he's very blocked there. Unfortunately for him and or for the Rangers, his players of his type of skill set tend to not fetch all that much on the trade market, especially with second base. You know, a lot of teams are really not looking for a second baseman right now, and historically, second basemen who, you know, are not big, you know, big tools guys, like Ibanez is not a big tools guy, not a lot of flash in his game, tend to not command all that much in trade. So I don't know if he stays in Texas or if his future is in the Texas Rangers organization, but this is a very solid player who is, yeah, like you said, being a 23-year-old in the South Atlantic League in the low A last year was not much of a challenge for him. I don't understand why the Rangers put him there. You're transitioning a guy's transitioning over from Cuba to United States professional baseball for the first time. There's a lot of things off the field that, you know, you want to make things as simple for a guy in his transition. I think teams still really aren't sure what the best practices are in terms of helping Cuban players make that transition mm-hmm. to the United States. So I think there's a lot of different teams that approach things very differently, and the Rangers are, you know, this is about as aggressive of a team as you're find when it comes to prospect assignments. And they went the other way on this, and I can understand why they did it. But just from an on-field perspective, yeah, I mean, low A was clearly not much of a challenge for him, nor should it have been, not much of a surprise. He skipped him a level, got to Double-A, and I think he struggled there early on, and by the end of the season you could see him start to put things together. So is he an everyday guy, an everyday second baseman at the major league level? I think he's got a chance to be that guy. I think he is, the problem is he's a fringy defender, like a slightly below average defender for the position. What's going to have to carry him is his bat. I don't think it's an elite bat for the position, but he does have a knack for hitting. He's got a little bit of sneaky power in there, probably 10, 15 type home run hitter. So I think he's got a chance to be an everyday guy. There's certainly some risk to him getting there. I don't see him as any kind of a star impact type guy, but I think he has a chance to develop into that type of player.
And then since then, they've also signed Luis Yonder Lao. And you've emphasized many a time, do not focus on the dollar amount that a player signs for. In Lao's case, $110,000. I mean, by that, you would think that this is the guy who's going to be lucky to make a low A team. But from having seen him myself, and I know from what you've seen, he's much more than that, is he not?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've seen him take, I'd have to count, easily over 100 at-bats or so when he was still in Cuba. Now, the caveat to that, look, he was, at that time when he left, he was 23 years old. This was the last time I would have seen him, probably would have been in June 2015. The season, probably the Cuban season, would have ended, I think, April that year. So, and they were in the playoffs, so he would have played in that. So, it's been a while since he's been involved in competitive game action. And yeah, exactly like you said, this he signed for, or he has a deal to sign for $110,000. I don't think that is an accurate reflection of his talent when you look at it, both what other Cuban players have signed for, and what just international amateur players in general have signed for. I mean, there's about 230 or so players on the international market who signed for more money than him. There's definitely not 200 better players on the international market than Luis Yonder Lao. This is a guy who, there's definitely, the layoff is part of it, and there's other risk factors involved with him in terms of the especially the offensive approach. But this is a guy who is a good athlete who can play. We talked about versatility. He's an excellent defender at third base. I've seen him at second base. He makes good plays over there. He's got good range. He's got a great arm. Very athletic. He's still kind of raw turning the double play, but that's understandable. He's mostly been used at third base, and the tool set suggests that this guy should be able to play shortstop. He didn't play a lot of that in Cuba, but I think you're going to see him probably go to maybe Double-A, maybe Triple-A, and get some time at shortstop. We talked about earlier the Rangers putting guys at different positions. I think you'll see him play some shortstop, play a lot of third base and second base too. And I mean, in this Rangers farm system, it's, to me, there's really a clear top four guys in the system. And once you get past that, everyone from about, 5 or 6 to 15 or so, you can put in, you could justify putting in a lot of different orders, and to me, Lao fits into that category. I mean, he's a potential top 10 guy in their farm system, and to add that player for a really cheap price, I think was a very smart and low risk move for the Rangers.
I mean, I can't get over that. I mean, 110. You're talking about a guy who could be a top 10 prospect for them, and he was $110,000. That's We talked about how Cuban, I mean, it wasn't that long ago that Cuban players were getting massively overpaid, and in many cases, and it now seems like we almost have a market overcorrection the other way in some ways.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're seeing, the Cuban market is tricky. There's a lot of, off field, behind the scenes stuff that really, and guys are just getting terrible, advice and representation. I'm not saying in Lowe's case necessarily, but Lowe was a guy who changed agents a whole bunch of different times. But you're seeing, a lot of Cuban players talk to scouts about them, and they'll say, we like this guy for, I give him 500 or 800 or a million or whatever it is, and then they go to the player, and the guy, whoever's handling the player, says, oh, we want, $10 million for this guy. And they're like, are you out of your mind? This
guy, thank you. Moving on.
Well, exactly. We're moving on. We're going to spend our money elsewhere. We're not even going to bother, why even spend my time watching this guy when, the player's camp is so completely, delusional in terms of his market value that it's just a waste of my scouting time to go out and stay on watching this guy when we're not going to sign him for anything near the price that they're looking for. And I kind of understand to some degree where some of the Cuban the players the guys in the camp who are representing these Cuban players are saying, well, if the Dodgers signed Pablo Millán Fernández for $8 million, and Pablo Millán Fernández was at the time basically no better than an organizational guy who got $8 million. Well, my guy had better numbers than him, so he should get $10 million. But that's just not how it works. So you have these Cuban players some of them are just getting horrible management and horrible advice from the people who are representing them, and you're seeing them take massive discounts from what the market otherwise would offer if they had better and competent people who were advising them, who had better understanding of the market. And then I think also from the team's perspective, there is an overreaction to some extent where, you have the people making decisions ultimately on these players are about whether to sign these guys, or especially the higher priced guys or guys who are looking for more money, are owners and general managers. And in general, those constituencies are not people who are very well informed about the international market or Cuban players specifically. And I think they're looking at guys like Rusney Castillo, or to an extent, Yasmani Tomas, Hector Oliveira, even with some of the younger players, Roberto Baldaquin, Yoan Lopez, seeing some of the guys who haven't worked out and way overreacting when, look, every market there's going to be successes, there's going to be massive bargains. There's going to be guys who are overpaid. For all the guys you just mentioned who haven't worked out, there's also Yoenis Cespedes and Aroldis Chapman and Jose Abreu and Aledmys Diaz has turned into a huge bargain for the Cardinals. There's been, it's been a mixed bag. It's sort of like the major league free agent market where you're going to sign some guys who end up being great deals, and other guys, whether it's Pablo Sandoval or Jason Hayward or James Shields, who end up being very quickly, before the end of the first year of that contract, those contracts look like disasters. But teams don't overreact and say, oh, we're never going to sign another high-priced major league free agent again. Now it's a little bit different than it was, 5-10 years ago. I think teams are more hesitant to give out those, 8-9 year contracts or especially longer contracts for a pitcher. But I do think there is some overreaction from teams, especially at the, at the ownership GM level, to invest in Cuban players, especially for guys who aren't the younger up and coming type prospect. Not that Lao is all that old, and he just turned 25 in December, but I do think there is some. There's a lot of different factors for why we've seen prices drop on a guy like Lao or Jose Miguel Fernandez. But I think I think those are two big ones that contribute to why that's been.
Well, looking past the Rangers top 10, is there anyone that jumps out to you as a guy who's further down on that list that's kind of a keep an eye on because this guy could really emerge in 2017 and beyond?
Yeah, I mean, the two guys I think have probably the most breakout potential from that group. Like I was saying before, it's really anywhere from 6 to 5 or 6 to 15 or 16. You can make a pretty compelling argument to put them in just about any order. But I think the two guys who have the chance to really take a big step forward for them. Either next year or at some point in the next couple of years, or a couple of kids that they and they're still kids because they're still 17 years old. But our David Garcia, a catcher, and Miguel Aparicio, an outfielder. David Garcia, they signed last year out of Venezuela. He was the top catching prospect on the international market. Again, another example of, he signed for $800,000, which is a good bonus, but another example of the bonus is not necessarily a reflection of a player's value. I mean, the Braves signed Abraham Gutierrez for, $3.5, $3 million. He's another Venezuelan catcher, and just about every international scout I talked to last year preferred Garcia to Abraham Gutierrez. He was pretty clearly the number one catcher on the international market last year. It was a great job by the Rangers being able to get on him early and evaluate him and then ultimately sign him for a very good price. This is a guy who's going to stick behind the plate. He is, it's not a cannon arm, although the arm did improve after he signed. That's what happens a lot when you sign kids who are 16 years old. So, but he projects to stick behind the plate, and really his offensive game is his calling card. He's a switch hitter, pretty short, easy swing, a lot of line drives. Not a big power guy, but. He's got a knack for hitting, and he's going to stick behind the plate. They have Jose Trevino in the system ahead of him. He's an interesting catcher too, who's a premium defender, has really worked his way to become a premium defensive catcher. But I think Garcia has a lot more offensive upside than Trevino, and then Miguel Aparicio, another Venezuelan player. They actually came out of the same program in Venezuela, and another good example where the price is not necessarily indicative of the talent. I mean, $500,000 is still one of the bigger bonuses, but I know there were teams that liked him for a lot more than what he got, and thought that was one of the better values and the better signings of the year when the Rangers signed him in 2015. They signed him and Leone Taveras that year. He's probably always going to get compared to Taveras, but he's not. I think they're similar only in the sense of they're very well-rounded players, and they're very smart, high baseball IQ type guys, very good instincts for the game. But Taveras has one, Taveras is bigger, and two, he's just more explosive. Taveras is a quick twitch guy who has a lot of explosiveness and just a lot of tools in everything he does. Aparicio has solid tools. I mean, Taveras is a plus runner. Aparicio is, he's not, I don't even think he's an average runner. He's probably a tick below average in terms of his speed, but his instincts are so good that I think he's got a chance to stay in center field, even though he isn't a burner. But really, this guy has just a knack for hitting. It's a pretty short, easy swing. He has a good approach to hitting for his age. He's coming off of a good season in the Dominican Summer League. I think he's going to jump over probably, in almost every other team's case, I would say probably come to the Complex League and in Arizona League, but it's the Rangers, so you never know when they might
see him in Hickory.
You never know when they might step on the accelerator with him, but he'll probably come over to the Arizona League this year, and I think you're going to see him probably get some more attention once some more pro scouts are able to get eyes on him out there in Arizona.
But, it's not the system that it's been, but it is one that you look at and say, okay, there are some young guys who a year or two from now, as you said, Tavares is the top 100 guy probably right now, but he's not going to be too high because you kind of want to see a little bit of what he's going to do in full season ball. And but he's a guy who a year from now could be much higher on top of the top 100 list, because if he does pretty much what he's done so far, but he does it in full season ball, that's just adding a significant amount to the track record for him to go with the very loud tools. As you said, there are some other guys at the lower levels. And again, there's also going to be a couple of guys who are non-traditional prospects, and La'o being obviously an example of that as a 25-year-old. So it'll be interesting to see where this Rangers farm system goes over the next year. Obviously, some more of these guys could be headed elsewhere because, it's a tough division. The Astros continue to get better as well. So, that rivalry just continues to get better and better. The Angels still have Mike Trout and clearly have to be in it to go for it, because they don't have the farm system to rebuild, and they don't have the if you have Mike Trout, you're trying to go for it. Seattle's going for it, and it really kind of leaves Oakland as the only team that you kind of say maybe he's not in playoff contention as we begin the 2017 season. It should be fascinating to see where this goes in 2017, But Ben, I did want to, wrap up on this. You mentioned about Jose Luis Fernandez as well. It's a little bit off topic, but you wrote about him just recently. Is it possible that the Dodgers actually got a Cuban bargain?
Oh, I think definitely. For $200,000, what kind of player is that going to get you in any other avenue? You're not going to get a ton of upside, it doesn't buy you all that much on the market. But in this case, it does. And look, Jose Miguel Fernandez, we talked about all the other issues that Cuban players have faced in terms of trying to sign. You can add another year onto the timeline, or another year on for him just because of what he went through in Cuba. He tried to leave Cuba in, I think it was October 2014, and then was unsuccessful doing that and was suspended from playing and stayed in Cuba for a while. A lot of times somebody gets caught, well, all right, you figure they're just going to try to leave again very soon. And that didn't happen with Fernandez. He just stuck around Cuba for a while and wasn't able to play. We're looking at a guy who's now had a layoff of competitive baseball, at least in Cuba, for a couple of years. He did play a little bit in winter ball in the Dominican Republic, and obviously, since he's been in the Dominican Republic over the past year plus, he's been training and playing baseball, just not in a competitive environment. But this is the kind of guy who, if you watch him in a showcase, there's not really going to be anything that stands out about him. I mean, you go watch Yoenis Cespedes' workout, and you're going to see a guy who has speed and an incredible arm, incredible raw power. Jose Abreu, you're going to see enormous raw power. You're going to see the same thing from Yasmani Tomas, or if you see Rusty Castillo, you're going to see a guy who can who can fly. And, you know, after he, after he left Cuba, saw his power increase. So you see those guys in a showcase, you know, whatever you think of them as a player, you're going to see things that immediately jump out to you. Whereas if you're watching Jose Miguel Fernandez in a showcase, I mean, there's not really any tool that's going to jump out at you. He's a slow runner. He is not a big power guy. I mean, there's some power there, enough for him to hit, you know, 8 to 10, 8 to 12 type home runs over a full season, but nothing that's going to blow you away in batting practice. Even the swing itself, it's a short swing, but there's some kind of unconventional elements to it to a certain degree, especially if you're not used to watching a lot of, you know, Cuban hitters and the Cuban style of hitting. And defensively, he's certainly not anything flashy over at second base, or I know he's played some third base too. He's not a good defender at either position, but his strengths are that he rarely swings and misses. He has excellent plate coverage, very good hand-eye coordination, hangs in well against left-handed pitching, and he has outstanding feel for the strike zone. He's a very disciplined hitter. And if you're going in and watching a showcase, even if it's, you know, you're having your, you know, you're bringing him into your academy in the Dominican Republic and you're having your pro arms throw to him, you're probably not going to get a great feel for this guy's strengths and what he can bring to the table, which are his, you know, the bat control and the strike zone discipline and the ability to get on base. Now there's obviously, just in terms of purely a performance standpoint, there's some risk there, because there's not a lot of power in his bat and the defense. I think he's going to give runs back in the field, but it's for $200,000, a chance for a guy to have somebody who's, again, it's hard to see, like, typically I would say major league ready second baseman. It's hard to say that when the guy has missed so much time away from baseball over the past couple of years, that throws a different wrinkle into it. But this guy, I would think, would go probably straight to Triple-A. Obviously, the Dodgers are going to have Willie Calhoun, I would think, in Triple-A too. So maybe that affects things somewhat in terms of his assignment. But somebody who is should be major league ready very quickly. And was major league ready, at least at his peak in Cuba a couple of seasons ago. I think that's a tremendous price for the Dodgers to be able to add that caliber of player to the organization for them.
No, that was an interesting, obviously a fascinating signing. And hey, the Dodgers spent so much money in Cuba that I guess it was almost like they deserved to get a bargain at some point, unfortunately for Fernandez, but good for them. But well, thank you for joining us, Ben. For Ben Badler, I'm JJ Cooper. Thank you for another download of the Baseball America podcast, and we'll be back tomorrow. I believe we're going to talk A's tomorrow, and we may even do an extra Saturday podcast this week to try to get through the West, because we've still got Astros to go as well. So for Ben Badler, I'm JJ Cooper. So long, everybody.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit BaseballAmerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.